The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning to We the People, kinda.
Sort of. We're working on it.
Sort of, kinda. Yeah, we've, like Bob said, a bloodless coup has occurred.
There you go.
My name is Mark Kenton, and I'm here with my sister Linda.
Good morning, My name's Linda.
There you go, Linda. And Bob Martin is here, our trusted soundboard operator and all-around great guy, and he's here to introduce us because we are on We the People, and you know we've taken over. It's what we do. It's who we are. It's how we roll.
Sounds like an April Fool's gag several days late. Well, actually, Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff are off this morning. Mark and I were just talking about this. I believe this is the first time we have ever had complete live guest hosts for We the People, because usually and Elizabeth Woodward hosted with Aaron for a long time. Usually either one or the other of them were here, or we did a previously recorded show, but today we have none of the above. We have our Sovereign Minds hosts essentially joining us 2 hours early today, so welcome Mark and Linda.
I like to think of it as complete control.
Never know what we might do from here on out.
Anyway, we're here. Today is April 13th, 2014, and we've got some good guests on today. I believe we're going to have three guests today: Lowell Ponte, Terrence Moore, and Orly Tates. Tates, I guess, is how you pronounce
it. Tates, I believe.
Tates. And so we're streaming worldwide. This is KCNR1460.com. You can call in if you have a question or a comment to 530-605-4567. All shows are podcast and archived as well, and you can friend me, and I highly suggest that you do if you actually want to get some news, because it doesn't seem like you get anything out of the mainstream anymore, just little blurps and snippets and smidgens.
Just a little bit.
Smidgens.
Smidgens?
Yeah. Yeah, so I highly, suggest that you friend me at Mark E. Kent, and that way you can get the news that is the news instead of the no news that's not any news with our news organizations.
That's not true.
No?
They talk about some things just over and over again, not the real important things.
I don't know how many times you can talk about ditching a plane in the ocean. I mean, oh, we've been on a plane, ditching a plane for a month. I guess a standoff in Nevada, where anywhere from 1,000 to 5,000 protesters, Tea Party, Oath Keepers, and militia stand off against the BLM over a cattle ranch rights to water and grazing. And you see a little 10-second blurb on the news: the government is right, they've won all the court cases, and the little guy's wrong, and we need to take over his land and kill all his cattle. You know what I mean? So I guess that's not news, and I didn't see anything in the paper.
Yeah, it wasn't important that they actually withdrew.
Yeah, they were from
it.
Yeah, exactly. There was a standoff, and the BLM backed down.
Yeah.
Evidently, the sheriff came in from the county, and I heard he even had armed vehicles and said, "Hey, you guys need to leave." But I guess that's not news.
No.
Hmm. Maybe we should just listen to the girl from Epony, like we're in the elevator. Dun, 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 dun.
No, but we do have a good guest on right now on the phone. We have Terrence Moore, who wrote the book, The Story, Killers.
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 What's the story?
It's about the Common Core.
Oh, Common. I was going to look into this, but I didn't have time. A common sense case against Common Core. Are you with us there, Terry?
Terrence Moore, yes. How are you?
Okay, Terrence. Sorry, I didn't mean to be presumptuous there. Good. How you doing? I did a little research on you. You are a professor at Hillsdale College?
That's correct.
And maybe give us a little background, Terrence, about yourself. And I also see that you have a doctorate.
That's correct. I have a PhD in history. I'm a former Marine. I run a school in Colorado that was one of the top schools there. It was a classical charter school. And right now I'm at Hillsdale College on the history faculty. and I'm also helping set up schools around the country as a part of our charter school initiative. And we have currently 4 schools in operation and 4 that are going to start this coming year, all using a classical curriculum.
Well, I guess that completely debunks the thing that about Marines not being very smart, because it seems like you've got some credentials here. I see the University of Edinburgh. Edinburgh, is that the university in Scotland?
That's correct. Edinburgh is in Scotland.
Wow, interesting.
Most of the Marines I knew were pretty smart.
That's what I hear, too. But, you know, the mainstream media seems to, have this perception, especially lately, of the military, on all accounts, that they're not very sharp. And like I say, I think, you debunk that myth completely, looking at your credentials. But let's talk about... Let's talk about what you want to talk about here with Common Core. We're very interested in this. I'm curious, I have a grandson in grade school right now, and they started the Common Core, and I don't know, what to even think about it, because you hear, these horror stories, and, I'm just absolutely paranoid of leaving him in school, in fact, but maybe you can help us understand it better.
Well, the Common Core is it's a curriculum, but supposedly it's a set of standards that were adopted by 45 states in the country in 2010 with almost no public discussion whatsoever. And what prompted that adoption was a lot of race to the top money that was given to state governments at a time that they were running low on cash. And the standards themselves prescribe a set of teaching practices and a set of ways of going about things, and I think it's actually a curriculum that they're trying to sneak in, or at least solidify in the schools. Some of it's already been there for a long time. And it really is, if you look at it over the long haul, the knockout blow for progressive education that has been gradually increasing in this country over the last half century.
Now, that would be like a dumbing down then. I mean, isn't that what we were talking about here? And we say progressive. I mean, isn't this just out-and-out communism at the end of the day?
Well, it is a dumbing down, although, of course, the rhetoric is all about critical thinking skills and college and career readiness and raising the bar and so on, because they're not just going to come out and tell you that they're making math almost impossible to do for children, nor that they're sneaking stories in there that have a left-leaning political bent. So you can call it communism if you want to. The history is out of progressive education, whose godfather is John Dewey. And many of the things that are essentially programmed into this curriculum are following in this pattern. But in some ways, they're actually worse. I can think of 2 ways in which they're worse. One is that the real purpose nowadays behind a lot of schools, and this is why I think Gates' money is so involved in this, is to haul kids behind computers for about 5 or 7 hours of the day and essentially program them as though they were computers using these new fads.
Wow.
The other thing that is pretty awful about it is, in the case of English, which is what my book is about and what I've studied, is that they really are taking great stories away from children and replacing them with what they call informational texts. And that really is the novel thing, the really new thing that's a part of the English standards. And they're upfront about it. They describe it in a different way, but what they basically say is, we're going to take literature out of the literature classroom and we're going to replace it with informational texts. And these are either just unchallenging, boring, 2 to 3 minute texts that you can read very quickly that have really nothing of value to offer, or in some cases they're just straight outright political propaganda that have been imported into the classroom under the guise of information.
So that sounds exactly the opposite of critical thinking. I mean, critical thinking is problem solving, from my understanding of what they should have been teaching all along, is the fact that, how to analyze things for yourself and figure out, what the truth of the matter is. Am I off base there?
No, but see, they don't want critical thinking, and above all, they don't want students following great, ennobling stories that tell people about the human condition. This is the way schools have always taught children how to be more human, how to understand the English language, and how to read well, and that is by following great stories that are written by the master storytellers in beautiful language. But if you replace that with, for example, an article written in the 2009 New Yorker called The Cost Conundrum, Healthcare Costs in Atul Gawande. If you replace Shakespeare with something like that, then, of course, that's the way that you sneak in an article about Obamacare in order to make students dwell on things that really don't belong in an English class.
So they're taking the classics out, is what you're saying. I mean, like Treasure Island and things where, you know, they show the, or, you know, whether it's the one I'm thinking of, Tale of Two Cities with by Dickens. I mean, you know, it shows, like you say, the best of times, the worst of times, the best in men, the worst in men, as teaching tools so that they understand that the human condition can aspire to greatness. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah, they're depriving children of the classics and replacing it with a bunch of modern schlock, which essentially can be anything they want it to be. They go about this in a certain way that's really deceptive. One of the things is they put a lot of emphasis on complex texts. And they say that students should read complex texts as though we didn't know that. But when you ask them, well, what's a complex text? Then they give you this thing called the Lexile Index, which is essentially a computer model whose purpose is to rate texts about how complex they are. Well, this thing is woefully inaccurate. So if you take The Grapes of Wrath by Steinbeck, for example, what grade do you think that would be rated at by anybody with any sense?
Well, what grade it should be read at? I don't know.
Exactly.
I think I read The Grapes of Wrath when I was about 13, 14, I think.
I would say
sure.
Sixth,
so
right?
Upper middle school, high school.
Yeah.
According to the Lexile framework, it's a second to third grade reading text.
Well, you can't get that. I mean, a second grader's not going to get half of what's coming out of The Grapes of Wrath. I mean, the...
No, and see, that's the thing. They're not going to assign it to a second or third grader. But what they're going to do is they're going to devalue that literature by saying it's not very complex. And it's because The Grapes of Wrath uses very simple language. You know, it's not language that is unfamiliar to anyone.
But it's
whereas
a very complex
with these modern
story.
Journal articles, they can say these are really complex texts, and so therefore they can justify putting all this stuff in a high school curriculum and getting rid of great literature.
Okay, with that, we need to go to a break, unfortunately, and when we come back, we'll pick that up with you, Terrence, on that. This is KCNR 1460, home of the Free Fire Media.
And I can't sail my yacht. He's taken everything I got. All I've got's this sunny afternoon.
I was going to say Sovereign Mind Radio, but I think we're actually...
we're the people at the moment.
We're the people. Old habits die hard.
Yeah.
You know, what are we going to do today there, guy? We're going to take over the world again. We're talking with Terrence Moore from Hillsdale College, and we're talking about Common Core. And where were we at here? We were just talking about the cost conundrum and...
How they're changing the text of things that they're giving to our children to read.
Right.
And I wanted to ask you, Terrence, they do this also in the computer. What I mean by that is in introducing the computers into the classroom, then they have total control over, and the parents aren't able to view and know exactly what's going on. Is that correct?
That is correct, because what's going on right now is you have, I wouldn't call them traditional textbooks, but you do have a lot of textbooks, and the textbook companies are the one who take these standards and then essentially do a lot of mischief with them by putting the text in that they want to, which are in fact essentially called for in the Common Core itself. And I can tell you about some of the things I found in these texts, and it's really outrageous. But the ultimate game is to go away from books, I think, and to put everything on the computer and to have more or less a video classroom, which will turn teachers into glorified computer monitors, and it will mean that essentially everything will be centrally controlled by those who decide what our children need to learn.
Wow.
So the myth of local control is you know, completely done away with.
Do you think the teachers are aware of what's happening?
They're starting to become aware. It's more obvious in math in some ways because the convoluted ways that they want students to do math are just palpable and people are noticing that. But it's also starting to dawn on people that the English things that students are learning in English are not English at all. And parents are starting to get the sense of that and realizing that they really have to fight for these great stories to be part of their children's lives again. But let me give you a couple of an example of the sort of nonsense that you would find in a textbook. And this is by Prentice Hall, Pearson Prentice Hall. They're the biggest textbook company in the U.S. And they never tell you a complete story, of course, in these textbooks. So you'll get a chapter of this or a chapter of that. But sometimes they don't even deal with books themselves. So for 20 pages in which students are supposedly reading about Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which would be a good thing for them to read, not one single page of it in the textbook has anything out of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Instead, you have modern authors talking about ghost stories. You have a picture of Frankenstein's monster. And for 5.5 pages, you have a script taken from Saturday Night Live that was a spoof on Frankenstein.
Wow.
So that's what you have in place of the real Frankenstein. But it gets worse because here's the dialogue that's included in the script. Frankenstein's monster shows up to a village, and one villager says to another, "Well, maybe you're the monster." The head villager shakes his head and says, "I'm not the monster." Then he points to Frankenstein's monster and says, "Look at him. He's got a square head and green skin." Frankenstein's monster says, "Oh, great. Now it's a racial thing."
Holy.
You know what?
Wow.
You guys are a bunch of fascists. In the margin of the teacher's edition, so this is telling the teachers what they're supposed to say, these words are written. Point out the use of the term fascist. Explain its traditional political meaning and how it has been extended to refer to any right-wing extremist group.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I can't, you know, I can't, I'm
kind of lost for words.
Speechless here,
right?
Because, I mean, I read one thing where it said there was a multiple choice questionnaire where it said, you know, is the government always right type thing, and that was one of the choices. But, I mean, nothing quite as blatant as what you're telling me. You know, I mean, that is that prevalent through the whole course?
Yes. I mean, what I just gave you, of course, was taken from a textbook that would be read in the second semester of the senior year in high school.
Wow.
So this is not going to make students college ready. They wouldn't know anything about Frankenstein. What they would know is that if you really want to talk about right-wing extremists, you call them fascists. And, of course, who are right-wing extremists? Well, anybody that Common Core in the textbooks don't like.
Well, and fascism has nothing to do with right-wing extremists. Fascism is a marriage between the corporations and the government that basically run the economy. I mean,
sure, but they're loading in these things, which is why, you know, they give that great author George Clooney a place in the textbooks for his screenplay on the movie on Edward R. Murrow, which of course is blasting McCarthyism.
Right.
So you load that kind of bias into the textbooks, and I've found things that are just astonishing, dealing with Reagan, dealing with World War II, and it's not even close to being nonpartisan.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's just unbelievable. So you know, they give them a complete slant, and it's just like 1984, like right out of, you know, Orwell. I mean, changing the definition of the words so that they mean completely different things than they originally were, you know, intended to mean. And so you can change the complete language of what, and the meanings completely change, and now you got control of their minds, basically. Is that, I mean, am I going way too far with that?
Yeah, no, here's why this is important. And this is why they're taking the literature out of the literature classrooms. Plato told us over 2,000 years ago, whoever controls the stories controls the society. if you control the narrative of how people see human beings and how they see politics and how they see their country's history, if you control that, you control the minds of the citizens. And that's exactly what they're doing. And this isn't just one random textbook. This is an industry following exactly what the Common Core is setting up for them to do.
Wow, unbelievable. Maybe we can talk about solutions. Yeah. Or, you know, what should we do? What should the parents do? Just pull their kids out of school? I mean, you know, we've got to go to a break here, so I don't want to go too far into it. But, you know, I'm just amazed here. And who's behind all this? I mean, where did Common Core come from? I mean, that's another question that I have here. So
maybe we should go to a break, and then we can pick that up on the other side and get our answers and move forward with it. This is KCNR 1460, home of the Free Fire Media.
When I get older, I need my health care many years from now. I know I won't be covered by Obamacare. Get a hip replacement pacemaker. If I protest it at a town hall, he'll just lock the door. Obama don't need me, Obama won't feed me when I'm 64.
Should have been a DJ, Bob. I mean, I love this kind of music. We're back, Sovereign Mind Radio, We the People. You know, this is a takeover, bloodless coup, like we said. We're going on after the world here. We want to take over the world. Anyway.
We at least want to take back our country and our education and our children, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's like I keep telling people, hey, you know, what's more important, baseball, Sunday picnics, or your freedom? Maybe we ought to get involved here. So we're back here with Terrence Moore from Hillsdale College, and I hope I didn't offend you with the Marine crack, Terrence. I'm actually Army, so I could have probably said something about Army guys too.
we know about you guys.
But we appreciate your service to our country, that's for sure.
Anyway, we really do. We thank you a lot for everything you're doing here. Who wrote Common Core? Before we talk about suggestions, I don't know how much time we have with you, Terrence. So I'm kind of, you know, trying to get everything in that we possibly can to get out to the listeners here. But can you tell us who Common Core was written by, or where it comes from, or how did this get into our curriculum?
Well, this is something that progressives in general have been aiming at for a long time. We saw it back in the 90s with Clinton, where he tried Goals through 2000, which was defeated because of a popular uprising. But the most immediate incarnation of it, the leading figure behind it, other than Bill Gates, who's put probably $200 million behind it, is a fellow whose name is David Coleman, who's now the president of the College Board, which, by the way, controls the SAT and all the AP tests. And all of those are being rewritten, dumbed down, to be aligned with the Common Core. So that's a fairly frightening thing. The second question you asked before the break was, well, what can we do? And that's a big question, but I think there's two or three things we have to do. The first is, most immediately, we have to defeat the Common Core, because although there are parts of it that aren't entirely new, it is nonetheless the biggest, most egregious manifestation of these ideas that have been around for a long time. And that has to be done at the state level, and every state has some kind of resistance against it. The Stop Common Core movement, it's stronger in some states than in others. But it is strong out in the West, and there are some folks in California who are trying to beat this. And I'm in Indiana, where we're at the middle of the fight. We're the first state that had the pause, and the states are supposedly we're out of the Common Core, but the forces within Indiana are rewriting them and simply rebranding them. So there's a fight over that. But ultimately, I think the parents who are just enraged over this issue will have strength enough, especially coming into an election season, to show people that we really care about this. Ultimately, it has to be political. It has to, until legislators are afraid of their jobs and state school board members, it won't get repealed. So this has to become political.
So do you think it would help to get at the local level started, maybe get on some school boards and, you know, start putting pressure on everybody to get rid of this stuff? Because I just talked to a teacher on Friday, and she's about ready to start her own school or something, and I'm ready to pull my grandson out, quite frankly, if we can get it going. I mean, that's how concerned we are.
Right. Well, yes, I think I know a lot of folks who are trying to fight this on the individual school board level, and that's important because they need to feel the heat, too. But it's also a state issue, so both of these should be done. The second approach is exactly what you're doing and what this teacher is describing. I think if this doesn't manifest itself into a discussion of what kind of education ought we to have, if it's not the Common Core, and if what we had before was not very good either, then that becomes a national discussion about what a good education actually looks like. And that'll actually cause us, I think, to go back to the sound principles of education. And to be able to do that, of course, we have to have school choice, because districts themselves are not just going to up and say, oh, yeah, we've been teaching reading wrong for the last 40 years, so let's now adopt the real way to teach reading. So there's going to have to be pressure, and school choice at the moment is the best form of pressure, and that can come in a variety of ways, homeschooling, good solid charter schools, laws that are favorable towards startups of new private schools, and a host of other things.
Well, you know, you mentioned charter schools, and that's where my grandson is. And, you know, their biggest thing, their criteria is about is math and science. And but I have no way of really checking on what they're doing. And they are pushing him towards the computer. Yep. Seems like he's on the computer 24/7. And so how do I know if these guys are actually doing, you know, him a favor or turning him into a robot?
Well, here's what you have to understand about charter schools, and this is the confusing part of it. A charter school is simply a school of choice that is created by a group of local founders, or in some cases, larger management companies that have a national or statewide reach. No charter school is necessarily the same as any other school. You could have, if you want it, an Obama Leadership Academy. Or you could have the most classical school in the world called the Renaissance Classical School that starts teaching Latin in the fifth grade and does so all the way up through the high school. So the only thing that school choice does is give you an opportunity to do something that's different from what the regular school district is doing. So in addition to a favorable laws, there have to be people, citizens, founders, parents who stand up and say, we want this kind of school for our community because it actually produces the best kind of education, and then they have to go through the hard work of founding a school. And there are parents, there are citizens around the country who are doing that sort of thing, and that movement is growing as well.
Yeah, because I mean, I went to a couple of the events, and they just had recently a little assembly over the mathematics, and it's, you know, they were doing the breakdown of the different numbers to come up with the answers and all this thing, and you know, so it looked like they were really pushing the math side of Common Core, which frightened me after I started figuring out that this is a real problem.
Yeah, I was looking over some of the papers, I know, some of his math papers, and they don't even, if they get the problem wrong, they just, like, skip over it. They don't tell the kid, you know, that you've done it improperly or what the proper answer is. As long as you're close, you know, that I guess that counts.
Right. What they're doing, the math, is just appalling. It's an abomination. And it's been tried before. And everywhere it's been tried, it's failed. So this is the thing that probably most parents are noticing because it's so unlike anything that they've done or that has any common sense in it.
Hmm. Yeah, their big sell after they did the presentation was they've been doing this in Red China for years.
Yeah, that's what we want here.
It's like, okay, that makes me feel better. Yeah, they're a totalitarian society that controls every aspect of their citizens' lives, and so I don't know. I mean, I think you're right. We're going to have to go to another school or pull them out.
Right. I was going to ask with the charter schools if you, like, we're talking with my brother's grandson. If you disagree with what's going on at the school, can the parents get together and challenge the charter school in changing their studies or their books or how they present it to the children?
Well, see, here's the fundamental thing about charter schools that you have to understand. Whereas in a regular district school, there's the illusion of parental control where you can go and you can talk to your principal and you can talk to your superintendent. And that usually means getting ignored in 100 different ways. Mm-hmm. So they will tell you that there's a lot of things that parents can do. The thing you usually can't do is just take your children to another school unless you want to pay for a private school. With a charter school, there is no natural constituency. No one is required to go to a charter school. So you send your children there because you embrace that particular mission and philosophy of the school. If you don't like what's going on with your child, of course you can go to the principal and you can go to the board if you choose. And they're usually far more receptive than a regular public school. Nonetheless, they have a particular mission that they're following. So if you don't like what you see, then you pull your child out. And what that means is if you have a really great charter school that's doing well and all the right things, you may have, you know, 10 frustrated parents who don't like what they have and they leave, but you have a waiting list of 1,000. Whereas if it's a failing charter school that's clearly doing things the wrong way and not teaching children how to read and think, that charter school will end up just not meeting its budget and it'll go under.
Wow.
Which is a good thing because that shows that a failed experiment in education needs to fail.
Well, what if I decided that I wanted to go to the principal of the charter school? Is there some place that I can give, you know, show him examples of my concern? Where can I pull some examples and say, here, this is all a part of Common Core, and I have some, you know, some very high tentative thoughts about these examples and say, listen, you know, I've got concerns about this. You know, why is this in the, are you teaching this and show them that? Is there any place I can go to get the examples of the problems?
Well, yeah, if you have a child in the school, then you just go to the work that he's doing.
Okay. So we're monitoring everything that comes home, but how do we monitor what's in the class on the computers?
What the classroom setting, how could we monitor the actual classroom setting, what they're doing in the classroom with the children?
Just go to class, I guess.
Well, you could ask if you could visit. in the charter school that I ran, and this is how you see the difference among the charter schools, we always had 2 seats at the back of the classroom, and any time a parent wanted to visit, you know, provided the parent wasn't harassing the teacher or something, which almost never happened, any time a parent wanted to visit, all she had to do was sign in at the front desk and go and sit at the back of the class. We had nothing to hide. In fact, we wanted the parents to see what was going on in the school. So if you have a school, whether a charter school or a district school, that you can't get into and you can't see a day in the life of your child, something's wrong. And you know, the district schools are notoriously bad about this, and I have tried to visit schools, and it's almost impossible to get in. In fact, I think it'd be easier to get into a school in North Korea than it is in most American public schools.
Wow. We got somebody in the chat room. Liz says, put a camera on him. Put a camera on your kid.
Yeah, I don't know that you need a camera, but you should be able to visit your child's class. That just seems sensible to me.
I think they did it, but something about, like, you got to make an appointment or something. It's like, really?
Yeah, so we'll have to look into that because, you know, and then for me, I'm a tax consultant and I've been buried for months. I'm going to be coming up for air here in a couple days.
Well, I know that I wanted to know what kind of books and stuff they were introducing in that charter school, and they told me that they weren't available.
Yeah, they seemed that they were pretty tentative about giving us any information, like, you know, like we were kind of the problem. And I mean, that's sort of put my spidey sense on it and to start with, because gosh, you know, if you don't want to tell. So they, and you know, we mentioned about the books and they said, oh, it's the same stuff as last year. We mentioned a few things. We haven't changed the curriculum. So, which makes me think that they are changing the curriculum to and teaching them this stuff that we don't want them taught.
Precisely.
Okay,
well, keep fighting the fight.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. We'd love to have you back in the future and go over this, maybe when you get some more time and hit some more of the information to get out there what parents can do for their children.
And people should be looking to get your book, too. I noticed you have a book here. It's The Story Killers. We talked about it from the beginning. The Story Killers, A Common Sense Case Against Common Core. Where would they go to get that?
Amazon.com
then. Very good. And that would give them a lot of information that we talked about today, I'm assuming?
Absolutely.
Very good.
All right. Well, thank you again, Terrence, for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Okay. My pleasure.
All right. You have a great day.
Have a great day. All right, so I guess we're going to go to a break now.
Okay, we'll go to a break. If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR 1460.
Winter's Day with my friend the teleprompter. I stand alone, gazing out among you, watching you watch me. It's creepy, but it's too late. You chose me. I am Barack. I'm the Messiah. I'll talk of love and brotherhood with the Hamas. I'll send Hillary to negotiate. What they need is friendship, and friendship causes pain. Israel and Hamas, they're both the same. I'm Barack. I'm the Messiah.
Yeah, speaking of the Messiah, yeah, you know, the Kenyan that in the White House that everybody in the world seems to know is a Kenyan, except the people in America. At least that's my opinion.
The two-time voters?
Yeah, the guy even admits he's a Kenyan in his Harvard Law Review bio. And who writes a bio in the Harvard Law Review and says he's from Kenya and then changes his mind 20 years later and says that was a mistake? So I don't know.
That's just par for the course with it.
Serious concerns and no journalism anywhere. But today we have a very special guest on, and who's been directly involved in challenging Barack Obama and his eligibility to be president. And she's been going after this for quite some time. Are you there, Orly?
Yes, I'm there. I'm actually at the airport, but I can hear you well.
Very good.
Thank you for coming on.
How you doing, Orly? We heard you had a small accident the last week or two.
It wasn't that small. My car was totaled, but I'm fine.
Good. So you didn't get hurt or anything then?
Okay. Hello?
You didn't get hurt or nothing. Just the car totaled.
Well, I mean, I did get hurt, but it wasn't that bad. So
okay.
I'm going through some treatments, but I'm okay.
Good.
Considering the magnitude of the accident.
Good. Well, listen, I know we don't have you on here very long because I know you're sitting at the airport. So can you give us an update on what's going on
going on and court cases?
Absolutely. Well, there are five cases that are going on. One that is the most promising is in Maryland, where the judge has already issued a couple of positive rulings. This is a case dealing with Obama's use of a stolen Social Security number. It's a Connecticut Social Security number, and I can actually give it on the air because it's not his. It belonged to somebody who was born in 1890, 042-684-425. And actually, Obama made it public himself. He posted it online with his tax returns in 2010. And originally, he didn't flatten the PDF file, so the number became available to everybody. And it was checked through either FI, NSS, and VS. And he failed both. Both governmental agencies that actually checked for illegal aliens came with a conclusion that the number that our sitting president is using was never assigned to him. Originally, the Social Security Administration, what I tried to do is, first I tried to go under Obama and try to get this application for the Social Security number stating that Obama used it and it was not assigned to him. And I went through a D.C. court, and the judge declined to allow me to get this information, claiming privacy. So what I did, I tried to find sort of ingenious ways to get to the truth And I found under the name, I was able to find the person to whom it was assigned under his name, and he was born in 1890. And was it, I don't know if it was a stroke of luck or somebody at Social Security Administration is helping me, but they came up with a new law stating that if the person was born 120 years ago or earlier, you don't need a consent or proof of death of this person. You can still get the papers. So I submitted, and I submitted this application, and originally the Department of Justice on behalf of Social Security Administration claimed that this man has never applied for Social Security number. They don't have it. They don't have such records, and they asked the judge to dismiss my lawsuit, at which time I provided the judge with a copy of the letter from the same attorney from Social Security Administration, where I where in this letter she admitted that she has records of this gentleman, but she would not release them due to considerations of privacy. And with this letter, I also attached a copy of the new law, of the new rule that states that people who are 120 years old or older, they cannot claim consideration of privacy as an excuse. And I also provided a copy of the census papers from 1940, where this man has written that he was born in 1890.
And they don't reissue those, do they? I mean, they don't reissue Social Security numbers,
do they? No, absolutely not. And people, you know, Obama's operatives have written to multiple websites saying, well, maybe it was reused. We're running out of numbers. Think about it. A Social Security number is a 9-digit number. So we have to reach nearly a billion people, billion minus one, in order to run out of numbers. And we have only 330,000 people, 330 million, I'm sorry, 330 million people in this country. So clearly we did not run out of numbers. They do not reissue them. So that was just a bogus statement. Never. The Social Security numbers are never reissued to other people.
Well, this administration seems to be very good at covering things up. I mean, we got Benghazi. We got the IRS. I mean, you know, everybody keeps dancing around the fact that how could Obama, there's no proof of the White House, but there is a lot of proof here that there's a problem with him being eligible to be the president, no matter how you slice the pie.
I mean, it's not just that he's not eligible to be the president. He's eligible for a life sentence.
He's prison eligible, is what you're saying.
He's eligible to be moved expeditiously from the White House to the big house. The problem is corruption, corruption in the judiciary. But so far, this judge was fine. She actually ruled in my favor previously. She denied the motion by the Department of Justice to dismiss my lawsuit. And she basically gave them HELO, saying you guys didn't look well and you did not follow the guidelines. You didn't show me how did you do the searches and came up with a conclusion that this man never applied for the Social Security number and you don't have it. And basically she told them, you know, would go and keep looking and come back. That was pretty much the decision. And by the way, you can find all the papers. I post it on my website. It's orlytaitesq.com, orlytaitesq.com, orlytaitesreport.com, and you can find all of the rulings and pleadings from the case.
You know, it seems to me, Orly, that the tactic has been up to this point is, you know, anything that this administration doesn't want the public to know, the Main Street media blacks it out, or they use the Alinsky tactic of demonizing or, making fun of their opponents. I mean, you're a birther, you're this, you're that. But they never seem to examine any of the evidence in any kind of a journalistic integrity.
I know they can't do it because if they examine the evidence, they would see that we have a criminal sitting in the White House. So that's the only thing they can resort to is making jokes. And actually, just yesterday or 2 days ago, Obama appeared at a rally where he said, "Well, you know, I know where is my birth certificate, and other people don't. And my birth certificate is somewhere on the website. Well, what's on the website is a piece of garbage,
right.
Which a fifth grader can tell. I mean, it's a joke. Letter glass of different sizes, different fonts, multiple layers. So there is another case, a case in Washington, D.C., and that's in regards to Obama's fabricated selective service registration. The man doesn't have one single valid piece of paper. If it wouldn't be so dangerous for this nation, it would have been a joke. We would have had a great sitcom called Obama's
You're so right, Orly. I've been studying this for quite some time, and I was amazed at the depth of the evidence against this guy. And, let's just say for a moment, let's just assume that, okay, he's born in Hawaii. Well, it doesn't even matter because, if he was born in Hawaii, he went to Indonesia and went to school, well-documented, and in order to go to school in Indonesia, you actually have to become a citizen. So then he came back, which would mean that he would be, at the very least, a dual citizen, and he's still not eligible. But we're going to go to a break.
Yeah, we're going to have to go to a break. They're going to cut us off, and we'll pick it up on the other side. This is KCNR 1460, home of the Free Fire Media.
Only the echoes of my mind. People stop and stare. I can't see the faces.
You're listening to We the People with special guest host, your Sovereign Minds host, Mark Kent, and his sister, Linda Kent. Stay tuned for Hour 2 on KCNR Shasta Redding.
Well, I guess we're pretending we're We the People, at least a little
bit. We are the We the People at the moment.
Yeah, we want to. I don't know if Bill and Aaron are listening, but we've.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
Pretty much taken over.
And you think you're coming back next week?
Yeah, no. Oh. Yeah. They'll be back, and they're going to give us the jazz next week. Anyway, let's get back to Orly here because I was just over the break Googling. Kenya, looking at the booklet bio of Barack Obama, on his Harvard Law Review, Barack Obama, and I'm reading it right out of this, and he's the one that wrote his own bio here, and, later on, 20 years later, they say it's a mistake. Well, how can you make a mistake on your own bio? So my question is, were you lying then, you're lying now, and I'm reading it right out. Barack Obama, the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review, was born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. How can that be any kind of a mistake?
Absolutely. And I have submitted it to a number of judges, and this is still yet to be determined. None of the cases was heard on the merits. There is a case in Mississippi which I filed 2 years ago before the primary election. I'm still waiting for the decision of the judge, and hopefully it's going to come shortly. I'm waiting for the decision to have discovery. By the way, what's interesting is that in that case, one of the defendants was Loretta Fardy, who was the director of health in Hawaii, who allegedly certified the forgery as a genuine copy of a genuine 1961 birth certificate. And as you know, conveniently, she died in an airplane accident in December. What's interesting that she was on the plane together with her deputy director, and both of them were involved in certification of the forgery. And shortly after the takeoff, the plane went down, and the pilot was able to land the plane on the water. And actually, everybody got out of the plane. Everything was fine. There were statements by passengers that Loretta Fardy was fine. She was in good health, waiting to be rescued. There was a plane that happened to be flying above and saw the accident. And they continued circling the area just to tell the survivors that help is coming. They were very close to the coast. One of the survivors actually swam to the coast himself because it was so close. And shortly after this accident, it was announced that she died. And both the pilot and one of the passengers made statements that they're bewildered. How could she die when they saw her wearing a life vest and being in good health waiting for rescue? It's interesting that one of the papers, local papers in Hawaii, a reporter by name Jennifer Sinker Keleher, wrote an article stating that the autopsy came out, and it showed that she died from arrhythmia, irregular heartbeat. And right away, the brother of Loretta Fides stated, you know, she didn't suffer from any heartbeat, any irregular heartbeat. She did not have any heart conditions. She was an average swimmer. And the article stated that she was very anxious. She was afraid, and this anxiety caused her irregular heartbeat, and she was a rudimentary swimmer. So I demanded to see a copy of this autopsy. Actually, one of my supporters wrote to this AP reporter, and she said, oh, well, just contact the Maui Police Department, at which time I wrote to her stating I did contact Maui Police Department, and they stated they would not release a copy of the autopsy report unless there is a written consent of the next of kin. Please advise me which relative gave you the consent. And at that point, this reporter just disappeared. Nobody heard from her again. And there is a high probability that she never got anything. She never got an autopsy report. We don't know if this report states, if it exists, if it states what she says, if it was ever signed by the examiner. Because prior to that, I personally talked to the medical examiner, Dr. Harley, and she was telling me that she's waiting for the toxicology report. She would not be issuing a report without the toxicology. And then suddenly there is a claim of a report, and this report was never shown to the public. Nobody knows what exactly it states, whether it was signed, and even whether it exists. Yet, all the media just reprinted an article by this Jennifer Kelleher claiming that Loretta Fides died of arrhythmia. So in my case, I asked the judge to change the case, basically stating that instead of Loretta Fides, her estate is one of the defendants. And the attorney for the state of Hawaii asked the judge to just replace Loretta Fides with a new director by name Linda Rosen. And I filed some other pleadings. Basically, they cannot do it because Linda Rosen is not the one who was complicit in this crime. She was not the one who was complicit in this racketeering act. She was not the one who certified this flagrant forgery. So I cannot sue her, but I can sue the estate of this Loretta Fides. So we're waiting to see what the judge will decide in this case.
Wow. Well, that's all. I hadn't heard all of that stuff, you know, and I'll tell you what, I mean, you wouldn't, this, you know, some, you know, people would think this is just so far-fetched, and how could they cover all this stuff up, and to the extent that they've covered it up, but when you look at Fast and Furious, the IRS scandal, I mean, and there's scandal after scandal after scandal, where there seems to be a stonewalling or a cover-up of evidence, and no prosecutions. I mean, look at Lois Lerner, all of this stuff. It doesn't seem, how could it be a stretch that these guys wouldn't, if this is true, would these guys cover this up? I mean, I don't know how people can even think that these guys wouldn't do it, because there's been nothing but lies that have come out of this administration from day one. I mean, that are provable.
Well, they would have to cover up everything from that point on.
Absolutely. Yeah, so.
Well, here's another interesting tidbit of information. I have requested a copy of Obama's application to the Illinois Bar. And on this application, I found out that he lied. I mean, he committed fraud, because those applications are submitted under penalty of perjury. And there was the first question, what's your name? She put Barack Obama. Second question, did you use any other names? And he stated none. That was fraud in itself, for which he should have been denied his bar license, because he was hiding his identity under last names of Soya Toro and Soya Barker. We have his school registration from elementary school in Indonesia, where his last name is clearly stated Soya Toro, Barry Soya Toro. And we have his mother's passport records, where his last name is stated as Soya Barker. So this is a major fraud. Here's an applicant to become an attorney is hiding two of his identities under two different last names. And the first response that I got from the Illinois Bar was that because he no longer practices law, his license is inactive, they're not going to do anything. So I responded to the Illinois Bar stating, well, his license is inactive, but it can be activated at any time, and they have a duty to prosecute this. And they responded again that he resigned from the bar completely, so he'll never be able to practice law, and therefore they will not do anything. So you can see yet another cover-up.
You know what I? You know what I think, Orly. I think that that everybody's afraid of this because you know if it's true that the president is ineligible from whatever standpoint, constitutionally, natural born citizen, fraud, whatever it is. I mean, it does cause a constitutional crisis that nobody wants to touch because if this is true, everything this guy's ever signed into law is null and void, and that would just completely undermine this administration to the point of a collapse, at which it's collapsing as it is already based on the lies of all the other areas. So
absolutely. And think about it. What can be worse than Obama? Can anything be worse than somebody nearly doubling the U.S. national debt in 5 years? I mean, he incurred $7 trillion worth of debt. For that reason alone, any investigation wouldn't be worse, probably would be a turn for the better for this nation. Look at what's happening internationally.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, nobody wants to touch it because it's just too hot a potato. And the Republicans' answer is to just vote out and get him out of there, get the House turned over. And I know that the impeachment papers have already been drawn up for several different things. And so I think we have to go to a break, Orly. Can you hang with us and we'll come back after the break?
All right. Okay. Okay, cool. And this is KCNR, 1460, home of the community radio for the North State.
Sovereign Minds here in another 20-30 minutes.
Maybe now.
We've got Orly Tates with us. I got a couple questions that I want to go over before we lose you, Orly. Do you know anything about this British intelligence where they say they actually have a record in Kenya because it was a British province back in the day of the birth of Obama? Do you know anything about that?
There is nothing. This gentleman, his name is Shrimpton, I think Michael Shrimpton, he contacted me a year ago, and I said, well, please provide me any proof of what you are saying. And he did not provide one thing.
Really?
Nothing, not a stitch of evidence. So I do not believe that there is anything there, that there is anything legitimate. And actually, I was at one of British consulates in Europe, and I talked to the cultural attaché, and what she claimed that they left all the documents there, and that they have nothing. So
it seems like a lot of things. It seems like a lot of things are getting thrown out there, so that it can be discredited as well. I mean, the stuff that's important. I mean, you know, whether it's making fun or throwing claims that are, you know, unprovable out there, so it discredits the stuff that is provable.
The whole thing, exactly. That's what they're trying to do. For example, they're sending around a copy of a student card from Columbia University that says "foreign student," and from what I found out, this is bogus, because the number was traced to another person, and in 1981 they didn't even have student cards with barcodes, and it is done to discredit the whole issue. You know, they believe they can discredit one thing, they can discredit the whole issue, but now more people realize that this is all a hoax. By the way, I wanted to give you a compliment. I was just at a meeting with Ron Paul, and a lot of people knew who I was, and it was in Northern California, and apparently they listened to a program, because they said that they heard me on the program, on the radio.
Wow. that is a compliment. That really makes my day. I'll tell you what, I've been a big Ron Paul fan since I met him in 1988 down in Sunnyvale, and I have a signed copy from 88 of his book, Freedom Under Siege, and then I actually got him to sign it again last year when he was down at Davis for a rally for the presidency. So that really made my day. I appreciate that, Orly.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was funny that the students were asking him questions, and one the first question was, well, Obama is saying that he created millions of jobs, but where are they? Where are those jobs? And the first thing that Ron Paul said, well, Obama is lying. What else is new under the sun?
Yeah, so what else is new? I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, I read an article last week from the paper here that said that we've got all the jobs back that we started with from at the start of the recession. We're down to 6.5 percent unemployed, and it's ridiculous. And this is when the Federal Reserve was supposed to stop quantitative easing, and everything was supposed to be going in the right direction. And you look around you and you go, it's totally bogus. I mean, can anybody with any kind of seriousness and say that the economy is better?
No, absolutely not. You are looking at commercial real estate. It's in the dumpster. You are looking at the percentage of people who are in labor force, and it's the lowest in the past 35 years. We have about 91 million people who are, 91 million adults who are not in labor force at all. And out of them, when you look at people who are working age, who not retirees, there are about 50 million, the highest number of people who are not in labor force. And the jobs that are being created are low wage, part-time, no benefit jobs. You're seeing college graduates working for minimum wage jobs. I've seen a study showing 250,000 college graduates working for minimum wage jobs.
I'm looking. I'm looking right now at a chart from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and it's the civilian labor force participation rate. I had an article here that I'd pulled up that I was going to go over, and we are now descending almost straight down, and we're at the level of between 1963 and 1960. And continuing to descend to the lowest participation rate, you know, and we have to go all the way back to 1958 in order to get there. But we're headed that direction, and we've got a lot more people in the country now. And back then, you could actually have one guy working, you know, and the wife staying at home or however they wanted to do it, because your salary would support the whole family with just one person working. So we're headed back to levels that are unprecedented.
Yes, it's terrible. So, you know, people are afraid, well, you know, if they're going to expose Obama, it's going to be a scandal. Well, any scandal will be better than what we have today in the White House.
Boy, I'll tell you what, that's the truth. Hey,
when you look at the military, that's another issue when we're seeing 200 top officers being purged from the military on bogus charges. And we're seeing people who are being recruited and promoted are people who are basically establishment people and have to follow the political correctness instead of doing what is necessary as top officers. We're seeing unilateral reduction in nuclear weapons, which is the opposite of what we should be doing, cut to Tomahawk missile programs.
Yep.
And this is just a Trojan horse, candidate destroying the nation.
This is right out of the military. This is right out of their playbook, you know, the old rules for radicals. I mean, you look at what's happened. I mean, you punish your enemies and you reward your friends. I mean, the Sebelius, you know, she just resigned, but she's going to have a big fat salary. And you can go out through, you know, one guy after another that has been rewarded for their incompetence. So,
Well, and corruption and bribery is just unprecedented in the U.S. history. Look at the contract that was given to those two foreign companies to create the website for Obamacare. Some $700 million to two foreign companies who had terrible track records, who were sued by the government of Canada and Great Britain for not performing. And the only reason they got the contract, well, two reasons. One, they were donors for Obama and Democrats. And two, the daughter and son-in-law of Valerie Jarrett work for the company.
Absolutely.
So it's just bribery.
Listen, while I got you on here, we got to go to a break here in a second and come back. But can you comment on what's going on with Zulo and all that investigation with Arpaio? Because we need to know.
That will be very fast.
Okay, very good. Okay, we're going to go to a break then.
All right, we're going to go ahead and go to a break, and we'll get the answer on the other side of this break. This is KCNR 1460, home of the Free Fire Media.
Did you ever think that we could be so close? Brothers, the future's in the air. Can feel it everywhere. I'm blowing with the wind of change. Take me to the magic of the moment on a glory night where the children.
We're back. Sovereign Mind Radio / We the People. Karev, we're taking over the world. Anyway,
we're just trying to get the truth out there and educate the people to what the heck's
be nice
going on.
It'd be nice if journalism wasn't dead. I mean, I don't think there is any investigative journalism anymore. And the ones that are out there, I saw a report on the CBS gal the other day where she was investigating Fast and Furious and Benghazi. And she was, if they get too good on the reporting, they just don't air the stories. Oh, we haven't got time. We haven't got this. So,
they discredit them and they just go away.
The mainstream media is a lapdog. It's a whore. It's a prostitute. It's a whore to the administration at this point, because they will not report anything that they don't like in their narrative. So, and that kind of goes to that Common Core narrative that we talked about earlier. I mean, we're being so screened out now.
Yeah.
With
let's
that
get back to Orly and let's get the update on the Sheriff Arpaio.
Well, there is absolutely nothing to update because they never came up with any new information. Basically, 2 years ago, actually nearly 3 years ago, myself and a number of investigators provided a file with evidence, actually evidence that I have already submitted to multiple courts back in 2009. All they did is, before the election, when our fire ran for sheriff in Maricopa County, Arizona, he used this evidence. Basically, they just confirmed it, and they used it to do press conferences as a massive fundraiser. He worked with a number of bloggers, Joe Zafira from WNZ, Berthier Ford. There is another radio station, Carl Gallup's, and they raised millions of dollars. And but they did not come up with any new evidence. But what is even more troubling, that they have never submitted a criminal complaint to any authority, to any prosecutor. They just use this as a fundraising tool. I, for example, contacted the district attorney of Maricopa County, Arizona. Since Alpaya claimed that they have a statement or affidavit from a forensic document expert stating that Obama's birth certificate is 100% forgery, and that's a forensic document expert from Hawaii. So this is something that he was supposed to submit to the district attorney before the election, and I submitted an official FOIA request for information, and I got a response where the representative of the district attorney said that, this document was never provided to them. They don't have it.
Wow.
They never provided anything to the Attorney General of Arizona, to the U.S. Attorney for the District of Arizona, or to the Judiciary Committee or Oversight Committee of Congress. They just used this issue to raise money, and that's it.
So it's all about politics.
For 3 years.
So it's all about politics. Politics and money.
And not only that, I mean, they heard a number of cases because I had a very important witness, senior deportation officer John Sampson, who testified for me in Georgia. And I subpoenaed him, Arfire, and Zula to appear in other cases. One of them was a promising case in Indiana before the election. Not only they refused to comply with court-issued subpoenas, which is obstruction of justice in itself, but on a radio show, just like your radio show, I was on a radio show in Colorado with Peter Boyle, who got this John Sampson on the line as well, since he lives in Colorado, and he admitted that they made a deal. He, Zulu, and Arpaio made a deal not to comply with the court-issued subpoenas and not to appear in court in Indiana. So three of them did not appear. As a matter of fact, what Arpaio did, he invited John Sampson to travel to Arizona. He paid for his airfare, and he deputized him as part of his cold case posse. And then he told him, well, now you're part of my cold case posse. You cannot testify for Attorney Ori Tate in any of her cases. So not only he didn't find any new evidence for 3 years and didn't submit any case of support, he tampered with an important witness. That's obstruction of justice. It's conspiracy to obstruct justice. Those are very serious issues. And, you know, one day it will be reviewed. And for example, for months they were saying, well, universe-shattering evidence will be provided by Arpaio and Zulu in March. For the whole month of March, people were waiting. They went to this CPC Month Radio, Carl Gallup, waiting for information. They were checking on birthdayreport.com for information, and nothing came out. There was no evidence. So, I mean, and I guess some people just gullible and they just, you know, continue listening. But this is just criminal, absolutely criminal. Moreover, there was a case against Arpaio that was going on. Actually, it was filed, I believe, during Bush administration and continued during Obama administration, where the U.S. attorneys claimed that Arpaio violated rights of Hispanics in his county by not prosecuting crimes against them. And so as this investigation was going on, and if it were to be proven, he himself could have faced jail time for this. This is a criminal offense. He started talking about Obama's birth certificate. And sometime in August, before the election, the U.S. Attorney's Office suddenly announced that they will dismiss the case against Arpaio. They would not proceed with this case. And at the same time, Arpaio himself stopped doing those press conferences. And Zula continued talking, but Arpaio stopped doing press conferences. I cannot say for a fact that there was an agreement, but a lot of people suspect that there was some type of a quid pro quo where Obama did not prosecute Arpaio, and Arpaio never filed any official criminal complaint against Obama. And just in February, right before the scheduled universe-shattering release of information, there was an article in a paper of Arizona that stated that FBI had sufficient evidence to prosecute Arpaio, and the U.S. attorneys decided not to prosecute them him then. And to me, it looked like a threat from Obama saying, listen, you're going to release anything in March as you promised. We're going to go after you. You know, they did not proceed with the case, but they did not dismiss it with prejudice. They just withdrew the charges, and they can refile them again. So basically, this, I believe it was a threat to our prior listeners. FBI has this complaint against you. We have it. You open your mouth, we're going to go after you. So there was no press conference from Arpaio. And, you know, as I said, since August of 2012, when charges were dismissed against Arpaio, there were no press conferences by Arpaio. But also, he's never done anything. Just, you know, raised money, made some noise, got reelected, and interfered with cases.
Wow, so it's business as usual. I mean, anymore, we don't, you know, the rule of law is going under the bus, and, we don't know who the heroes are and the truth is telling us anymore, because you can't, you know, the media's lying. I mean, that's becoming so obvious it's ridiculous. We did call Sunrise Tea Party at one point, and they were very angry at Arpaio.
Yes, they were.
And we were shocked. We didn't know what to believe anymore.
Because he defrauded them. You know, 250 people have submitted this complaint, and they were seeking action because Arpaio promised there is a criminal case going on. And what's interesting, he didn't even conduct this case properly, so proper channels within the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department. It was handled through Zulu, who is the director of this private organization called Cold Case Posse. And it's 501c3. It's a nonprofit. And, you know, they raised large amounts of money, but it didn't even go to the Sheriff's Department. It went to this, to Zulu's organization. And at the end, Arpaio didn't do anything. After demands to file a case, finally Arpaio said that he has no jurisdiction to file any case against Obama. So why did he raise millions of dollars for this case if he had no jurisdiction to begin with?
You know, what it is that these guys seem like they get something on anybody. I mean, it's reminiscent of when Obamacare was examined by the Supreme Court and they found that it was constitutional and it was a tax, you know, and looked like Justice Roberts was going to, you know, weigh in against it, and then all of a sudden he voted for it. And I mean, it seems like this administration just gets something on everybody. Maybe that's the NSA spying. Yeah, I don't know.
With Roberts, as you know, they couldn't have children. They adopted two children from Ireland, you know, those blonde white kids. And what's interesting, the official adoption papers showed that the kids were adopted from South America. So there were questions, how did they find those blonde, blue-eyed kids in South America? Then they found out that the kids were actually from Ireland. And Ireland has very strict laws against foreign adoption. So what they did, they went around Irish adoption laws by flying the mothers of those babies with the babies to South America and doing adoption there. So It didn't sound very ethical, so there were questions about it. So clearly, there is a high probability they had something on Robert. But not only that, just yesterday I was watching this interview by Sybil Edmonds, and she's the FBI whistleblower, and she was stating that FBI does background checks on each and every candidate to be appointed as a federal judge, and that typically the ones that are being chosen are the ones that have something, that they are, there is something in their history, maybe some sexual problems and indiscretions, financial taxes, that they have something on them. Those are the ones that typically get appointed. And, she's speaking out about this openly, and it's a serious problem.
Wow. Well, listen, we're going to go to a break, and then we got another 15 minutes with you, Orly.
I will be going, I'll be going towards the plane. Hopefully I'll still hear you, closer, at the terminal. But, before I go, as you know, I am running for Attorney General.
Very good.
People can go on my campaign website. It's runorlyrun.com. RUNORLYRUN.com. And if they want information and pleadings from the cases, they can go on my foundation website, which is OrlyCaseESQ.com. ORLY, T as in Tom, AI, T as in Tom, G, ESQ.com.
Very good. Thanks, Orly.
You're going for a break now?
Yeah,
we're going to have to go to a break.
Okay.
Just in case we do lose you, we want to thank you so much for coming on today and discussing all these matters with us. And
My pleasure.
Okay, so we'll go to the break now. If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR.
Sovereign Mind Radio / We the People. Yeah, what a morning, you know. We're not used to having 3 hours. We still got another hour to go, but we've got Orly on the line, I think. Are you still there, Orly? Yes, we've got Billy Bob on the line as well. And Billy Bob, I think, wants to make a compliment or a comment to Orly here. Are you there, Billy?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
Very good.
Great show, Kent and Linda. You guys do amazing work. Listen, just a quick moment to thank Orly for all her hard work and dedication. Her energy, she's going to be a George Washington of our second founding of this nation. And I just wanted to give you some energy and some heads up, and I appreciate everything you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Very good. Thanks,
Thank you
Billy.
Very much.
All right.
Yeah,
there
absolutely.
You. I really appreciate this.
Very
Thank
good.
You.
Yeah, we are in the middle of the second American Revolution here, where anybody wants to believe it or not. I mean, just because they won't, Rachel Maddow won't talk about anything but a plane that was ditched in the south of the Indian Ocean. I mean, there's big things that are happening all over. I mean, the Nevada thing and everything. And, it's just amazing. We were just talking about it on the break. The depth of what's going on, the depth of the lies, the depth of the corruption, the depth of how big our government has gotten and out of control. I mean, you would have never thought about this when we were kids. It's unbelievable.
Well, just in the last 10 years.
Yeah, just
but it's, you know, what happened in Nevada yesterday shows us that people can make a difference where what 1,000 people were able to make Bureau of Land Management back away from taking over the land of this rancher from rounding his cattle. And just recently, and not only there is an issue, of course, with Harry Reid and his son Rory, where Rory approved as a commissioner sale of thousands of acres of land for about a 30% of its value to a large Chinese company. But today in the morning before the flight, I was looking at another issue. When you go on the website of BLM, you will find out that instead of protecting wildlife, they have there an article asking for opinions how to diminish the herds of wild horses. Why is this agency trying to diminish the herds of wild horses? At the same time, they're promoting those solar plants. And I'm afraid that we'll have another cylinder on our hands. What's interesting is that this company, First Solar, that is co-owned by John Walton of Walmart, one of the owners of Walmart, a multi-billionaire, is getting land from BLM to build a solar plant. And I'm yet to find out how much did he pay per acre. Did he pay the market value for this plant? I highly doubt it.
Well, my understanding too is, isn't Harry Reid in the mix here someplace along with his son on the deal?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Harry Reid, I mean, it's like mafia. One of his sons is a lobbyist. It's just like Biden. You know, Biden's son is a lobbyist. He was basically going to people telling, you want my dad to do you a favor? Hey, and he made millions of dollars this way. And one of Reid's sons is a lobbyist. Another son, Rory, was placed as a commissioner in Clark County, Nevada, which is pretty much like Cook County, Illinois. There was this approval which made no sense. They were willing to take cents on a dollar for this land. But what interesting, the land, they were selling it as a county land. On the other hand, they said the thing is federal land. But not only that, if you remember with Cylinder, the Department of Energy was giving and still giving grants and low interest loans for those solar companies. And if you recall with Solyndra, what they did, they've rewritten those loans where the federal government became the main guarantor. Basically, they were paying off the other investors before the federal government. So basically, the federal government was left holding the bag and losing $500 million with Solyndra.
Yeah.
And there is a high probability the same thing is being done in Nevada and California with those solar companies. Moreover, not too many people know that there is a deal, and I remember it was approved sometimes in 2009, where you can donate land for nature preserves They have a program 2-to-1. For example, somebody can buy for peanuts land in Nevada from where land was, where there is nothing, desert, and donate it to BLM. On the other hand, BLM, for every 2 acres of donated land, they can release an acre. And imagine, they can release an acre of land somewhere in Southern California by the ocean where the land is worth its weight in gold. And this way, those people can make millions, if not billions of dollars. And this is just legalized corruption, legalized theft.
Yeah, it sounds, I was going to say, it sounds a lot like there's Agenda 21 mixed in the middle of that as well, and some cronyism to, you know, pay off their friends, for everything. I just wanted to say before we lose you here too that a lot of people think this backing off of the BLM is a ruse, that they're just going to come back, even harder here as soon as the smoke clears a little bit. And, we need to be careful out there that this is not
absolutely
over.
Yeah, this is not the end. This is just, basically they were trying to diffuse the situation, deflect the attention, and they will go after Clive Bundy, and they will go after others. But what we're seeing is a massive theft. Something like, I believe 70%, if not 80% of land in Western states is owned by the federal government.
Right.
And imagine if they're playing this game on a large scale, we're talking billions of dollars that are basically taken away from the government and go into the hands of a bunch of billionaires.
Yep.
That's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're seeing honesty being pushed. As a matter of fact, believe it or not, you're going to be laughing. I was invited to speak as a candidate for possible endorsement by the CFL CIO, which is labor unions. And I knew that they always endorse Democrats. There is no chance. But I figured I'm going to go and just give them some of my thoughts. It's easy to sing to the choir, but it's hard to go and talk to people who have opposite views. So when I provided them all my information, they asked me, well, what do you think about this immigration reform? There is growing consensus. And I said, well, growing consensus among whom? A few billionaires were pushing for it. One of the gentlemen tells me, well, you know, you're an immigrant. You got your pass to citizenship. Don't you think that others should get a pass to citizenship? I said, I did it legally. We're talking about millions of people who here illegally. Do you think it's going to improve the issue? You're giving this amnesty, do you think it will make it worse? It's going to be a magnet for more and more illegals that are taking jobs and lowering wages and taking benefits. It's a disaster for your own members. And this guy looks at me and he tells me, well, you know what's going to happen if we give all of them amnesty? We'll have a more colorful society and we'll all be very happy. I mean, I was thinking to myself, is he completely out of his mind or just partially? So I'm telling him, okay, well, if you feel that makes us a better society and more colorful, why do we even have borders? Let's just do away with all American borders. There are 7 billion people on the face of this planet. Let's bring all of them to America, and it's going to be a very colorful society. We'll be broke within 5 days, but we'll be colorful.
Yeah, we'll look like Bangladesh or someplace. Yeah. Listen,
they're going to cut us off here.
Hey, be safe out there, Orly. We appreciate you coming in, but we got to go do a hard break here.
All right, this is KCNR, 1460, home of the Free Fire Media.
Job to be done. Let's roll, America. There's a battle to be won. Wake up, America. You're too young to die. Let's roll, America. Left or right,
are American.
Not but we came to fight.
We are American.
Somebody's gotta stand up.
Stand up.
Somebody's gotta do what's right. We're rising cause we're fed up. Got our house in order and got yours inside.
Good morning, Sovereign Minds.
Different hat on now. Here we go. Cut the rock and roll.
That's right. This is Mark Kent, and I'm your host. And we've been your host for quite some time this morning. We were subbing in for We the People. And so we're just going to keep going on
here. Yeah, we're just going to keep on this roll.
I'm going to give you a quote. And the quote is, government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everyone else. That's Frederick Batisse, French economist, 1881 to 1850. And there's wisdom in those words. Now, we're streaming worldwide. And, you know, today is Sunday, April 13th, 2014. And we just had an hour. We had 2 hours. We had Terrence Moore on from Hillsdale College. And the last hour was Orly Tates. The next hour is going to be Lowell Ponte. And boy, we have an exciting show today. And you can call in at 530-605-4567 or KCNR1460.com. Get on the chat room and make your thoughts or questions known.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. I had a couple stories, and then I want to get right to it with Mr. Ponte. You know, the first story I have here is Chicago murder rate plummets with concealed carry laws. Who'd have thought? So now that legal people are carrying firearms, I guess the bad guys don't really want to take on anybody who's armed.
But we already knew that because it's shown time and time again all around the world how this happens, folks.
Yep. Here's another one, USA Today. Legislation would ban state GMO labeling measures. So let me get this straight. Washington introduced Wednesday a bill that would put the federal government in charge of overseeing the labeling of our food with genetically modified ingredients. Really? Since when is the federal government in charge of, the local people labeling their food or the state's labeling? You know, it's ridiculous. And there's no big money behind that. Oh, that couldn't be possible. Yeah.
No, you there's know, nothing I mean, going on here, folks.
Yeah, the legislation known as the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Act would require the Food and Drug Administration to review the safety of products before it enters into the marketplace. That the safe, anytime they say it's the safe factor, it's exactly the opposite. It's the non-safe and inaccurate food labeling act.
Yeah, it's kind of like the smart meters.
Yeah.
If it says smart, it's probably not that smart.
It's kind of like military intelligence, jumbo shrimp, sort of an oxymoron.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's see. The next one would be, we talked about the Harry Reid behind the BLM land grab that at the Bundy Ranch out there in Nevada a little bit. We already hit on that one. And then the last one before we get to our guest here is the West slow motion collapse. This is written by Jeff Nielsen. And, you know, it says many analysts outside the mainstream herd have been making dire predictions about the collapse of the economy of the Western Bloc for the past several years, him included. These predictions have not come to pass. Does this mean that the predictions are wrong or at best woefully premature in our thinking? The answer is simply no. The thing is collapsing. It's collapsing in slow motion. But at the same time, if you go out there and look at any real stats, I'm looking at the, you know, civil labor participation rate from the U.S. Department of Labor Bureau statistics, you know, the participation rate is just, you know, tanking all the way down and straight down. The St. Louis adjusted monetary base from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis is going straight up. So that means that all this money printing is getting, out there into circulation. And
that means the price of everything's going up and your dollar's going down in value.
So I think what we're going to see is what Maloney predicted is a big deflation before the hyperinflation. So nothing's changed out there. And let's see if we can get Mr. Ponte on the line with this. And let's talk about some of these economic issues and get his point of view. Are you there, Lowell?
I sure am. Linda, Mark, great to be with you. Anybody who opens an hour of a show by quoting Friedrich Bastiat, you guys are wonderful. Gee, I mean, Friedrich Bastiat, remember, not only said government is the mechanism by which everybody, illusion, by which everybody tries to live at the expense of everybody else. He said we need to remember that government lives at the expense of all of us.
Yep.
How appropriate that is to remember as we're only days away from April 15th.
And yet, yes, well, we know that one.
Freedom Day. Tax Freedom Day will not come till 111 days into this year.
So it is about June or someplace.
More important than that, Americans for Tax Reform reminds us there are other forms of taxation, not least of which is regulation. And they have that into a thing called Cost of Government Day, which will not come until July 13th.
Wow.
You'll be working more than half this year for government. My co-author of several books and I, Craig Smith, have put together yet another kind of day that adds in inflation, which is a deliberate government policy that is a de facto tax.
Yep.
That picks the money out of your pocket. That would take us well into August.
Wow. And no, so we're not even counting fishing license or anything else either.
No, I mean the challenge. Well, I mean, we can count the mandate now of requiring you to buy insurance. That is a regulation. This is what Ted Kennedy was so fond of. If he couldn't get a law passed taxing you to do something, he would just have the government order you to pay for it.
Wow.
And that would be a mandate. And he did that with thing after thing after thing. So we now live in a country where only 101 million Americans still have full-time jobs. That's the lowest proportion of the population working since Jimmy Carter. But we now have 108 million people on one or another form of means-tested welfare. We have 49.2% of all households in the U.S. where somebody living there gets a government check. So how long will it be until our elections are just bidding wars for who will offer the most free money to the most people?
Yeah.
I mean, this is the potential future that we are fighting against with books like our recent The Great Withdrawal. But what would you guys like to talk about today?
Well, I think you're on a roll there, Lowe, because, I mean, you know, we're talking about the same thing. The real deal is I think we're in for a monetary collapse because you can't keep taking from the haves or the workers and, you know, give to the moochers and the looters and keep that going at some point. You know, people are leaving California. They're leaving the country. We are in dire straits economically, and then the Fed's printing money like there's nobody's business, you know, with QE, QE1, QE2, QE3, you know, interest rates easing. I mean, and I think what they're this whole pullback with the printing is an oxymoron as well. They're going to have to keep printing just to stay afloat. We're in dire straits. What do you think?
Well, they'll have to find a way to conjure money, and they're doing that by all kinds of other financial tricks that are coming into effect. So, yes, they will have to keep conjuring money out of thin air because there just isn't enough productivity left in the country to cover things otherwise. By the way, I mentioned regulations as a cost. There was a study out in the Journal of Economic Growth in January 2013 that puts it starkly this way. Suppose there had been no government regulations added just since 1949. I mean, just after the end of World War II. Today, average income, household income in the United States is $53,000. If those government regulations had not been added in the last 60 years, the average household income in America today would be $330,000.
Wow.
America's gross domestic product today is $15.1 trillion. It would instead, without those regulations, be $53.9 trillion.
And then we wonder why we're all broke.
There would be no unemployment. There would be no concern about America not having the money to pay for things. We would still be a phenomenally rich, prosperous, successful country, and the regulations have just choked us to death.
I totally agree. I mean, you know, the real deal is that if we don't get rid of the Fed and the income tax, go back to the constitutional precepts of money, of actual, you know, money being backed, but, you know, not just being backed, but actual money and getting rid of the income tax, you know, go back to apportionment among the states like the original Constitution in gold and silver. I mean, that's, we're losing our buying power. We've lost, since 1913, 98% of the value of the dollar on top of all these other regulations. It's just insane, isn't it?
Exactly right. And what people forget is that when Woodrow Wilson came in, he immediately implemented two things that Karl Marx had called for in the Communist Manifesto in 1848. He created a progressive income tax.
Yep.
Which Marx said was one of the 10 best ways to destroy capitalism, and he created a central bank, the essence of which was to seize ultimately all control over finance, banking, and so on in the country.
But we're on the same page.
We'd operated with small, regional, or independent banks.
Yep.
And we had done just fine. We had a tremendously prosperous country. We did have occasional crashes because we were practicing an insane thing that came from England called fractional reserve banking, meaning that the bank takes your money and then lends it out to somebody else while pretending that it can give you back your money at a moment's notice. So it's a huge Ponzi scheme.
Absolutely. Listen, we got to go to a break, Lowell. Let's come back with the Ponzi scheme and keep talking because, you know, we don't. Nobody gets this on mainstream. It gets hushed up. Anybody talks about it. So we just keep hammering on it. But let's go to a break here. We'll be right back.
If you want to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. This is KCNR 1460, Community Radio for the North State.
Song. I like that.
That's going back a little
That's
ways
going
there.
Back, going back to the end of the day. Listen, we get a little ahead of ourselves here, Lowell, and I wanted to kind of introduce you a little better than just, hey, you're on the air, guy. And, you know, you're one of the most respected, hosts on the air radio programs. You've done Lowell Ponte Live. You've been on, on the TV, David Letterman, I believe.
Used to write for Reader Digest.
Yeah, just all kinds of stuff. You've been a foreign correspondent in 32 countries and so you've been around the block a couple of times here, and so.
Oh, I have. And by the way, you probably noticed the news this morning is they are still reporting hearing pings from the U.S. Constitution, even though it was crashed by the progressives into the sea 100 years ago. There's still evidence it's alive down there.
Hey, that's a good filler, man. In the last 100 years, we've been getting pings.
Yep, we've been getting pings.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
So, there was just a poll out from Breitbart, for example, this morning. 60% of Californians believe they are overtaxed. Well, duh.
Did the ping get you or what? Are you hearing me now?
I'm a fellow Californian, of course. I'm just from Redlands instead of Redding. So.
Yeah. Oh. Well, we know where that's at. We actually used to live in the San Bernardino Mountains up there at Running Springs. Went to school there until second grade. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Small world. Also, we wanted to mention you got a couple books out, too. You have Crushing the Dollar and Inflation Deception. That you've written that people probably...
We have that. We also have The Great Debasement, and our current book is The Great Withdrawal, and the book that will be out this summer is called Don't Bank on It, explaining the 19 ways in which basically mean you're an idiot to have a bank account.
So
I still remember... There in Redlands, when I was 5, my mother took me down to the Bank of America, and I got my first little passbook. And I had an account with $5 in it, and it was so safe, and it earned real interest of 3% or 5% or something. How much interest do they pay you today? They pay you nothing.
You probably have to pay them to keep the account up. So.
That is actually what the European banks are now talking about.
Absolutely.
They call it negative interest rate.
Yep.
And you will have to pay them to have a... But the point is, it used to be that having a bank account was a low-risk, high-reward exercise that encouraged savings. What is it today? It is an ultra-high-risk exercise for reasons we can discuss if you're interested.
Sure.
But they pay you nothing. And therefore, why take a risk with your money to be paid nothing?
Yeah, because you know under the current Dodd-Frank rules, you are an unsecured creditor, and they can actually seize your bank account. You don't own your money anymore as soon as you put it into the account. And, you know, they're talking about bail-ins Cyprus style. What do you think about that?
Oh, well, that's what we have written about at great length. In fact, we have a whole chapter on that in the current book, which is The Great Withdrawal. By the way, we'd be happy to give all of your listeners a copy of that book post-paid.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, nice.
50-page, $20 at the bookstore book. But mercifully, my co-author doesn't need the money from selling books. He's a very successful businessman. He and I are just trying to save the world for our grandchildren, bring back the republic, much as you guys are fighting to do, go back to a world of big people and small government and individual freedom and honest money. You take away any of those things, of course, and the country will spiral down. And one of the things they've done is take away the honest money.
Boy, isn't that
so
the truth.
So when money is something, I mean, remember, when they created the Federal Reserve in 1913, the very opening lines of its enabling legislation were that its purpose was to furnish an elastic currency, quote unquote, to replace that nasty old solid gold stuff that the politicians were not free to print all they wanted of. And they have since gone so crazy printing money. I mean, remember what P.J. O'Rourke said. Well, P.J. O'Rourke said many wonderful things. P.J. O'Rourke said that liberalism is just communism sold by the drink, which is so true. But he also said that, you know, giving power like this to politicians is like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys. You know, it will not end well. And that's what's happened. We have spendaholic politicians of both parties who just have gone nuts conjuring money out of thin air to give people. As a result, we now have this huge schism. As we discussed, 101 million people are all the ones still with full-time jobs, 108 million on welfare. And I don't mean Social Security. I mean means-tested welfare programs.
Wow.
You know, add Social Security, that's a whole other kettle of fish. And the way they do bookkeeping nowadays, Social Security adds to the total bill, which is to say the unfunded liability of the government, another $5 trillion every year. But do they count that in the budget as they bring in their, what, $2.77 trillion worth of taxes? That's right. Social Security alone is increasing our debt by about twice as much as we're bringing in tax revenue.
Yep. And it's going to get worse.
One government program.
And it's going to get worse as the... Absolutely, because the baby boomers are starting to retire, pulling their money out of the stock market because they have to, and going on Social Security. You know, it's just crazy. And, you know, I wanted to go back to what you said about the you know, counterfeiting is counterfeiting under any other definition other than if you're the Federal Reserve. But it what it does is it so distorts the market and it creates a condition where there's no price discovery. And, you know, I mean, can you comment on that as well?
Wow, you guys are doing such a sophisticated show. This is amazing. Yeah, yes, for a free market to work, there have to be honest market signals. You have to know what real demand and real supply and so on are. And that's determined by how people buy and sell. But if you inject vast amounts of money, the way I put it is there are some things that even the government can't do. For example, they cannot wave a magic wand and repeal the law of gravity. Personally, I wish they could. I wouldn't have to diet as much. But they can't. And therefore, You look at other laws in the universe. The law I focus on here that they also can't repeal is the law of supply and demand, which is just as real in the human mind as the law of gravity. Now, what that means is if the government suddenly dumps twice as many paper dollars in everybody's pocket by just running them off the printing press, what does that do when you go to the supermarket? Well, that just means very soon everything that used to cost a dollar will cost $2. You're not increasing the supply of goods for people to buy. All you're doing is increasing the number of dollars. And so every dollar loses value. And add on top of that, our government is now practicing a systematic policy. So is the Fed, known formally to economists. Believe it or not, this is a formal economic term, financial repression. In financial repression, the Fed deliberately holds the rate of interest your bank is paying you below the rate of inflation. And that means that every day you have a bank account, you are losing money. You are losing purchasing power because the inflation is eating up the value of your money in your bank account faster then whatever interest you might be paid is replenishing it.
I think that's one of the big reasons that people need to understand precious metals and hard assets and get their money out of the banks and into those things, because they hold their value in a relative amount, in a way that's relative to the amount of currency that's being printed into circulation. And
you know, what you have to remember about the founders of this country or the framers of the Constitution, they knew perfectly well the danger of paper money.
Yep.
I mean, they had had to live with it during the Revolution in that currency they put out called the Continental, which as we've documented in these books, lost phenomenal amounts of value because all they could do is print it. I mean, the British had cut them off from the British pound, and they didn't have enough gold at that time to go over to their own gold currency.
Yeah, that's the term, worthless as a continental. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. And therefore, when they wrote the Constitution, they specified hard money as the basis, which is to say gold and silver, as the basis of value. And if you printed money, it basically had to be linked to, anchored in, the value of hard money. Which, of course, from the beginning, made some politicians annoyed. They wanted, as in Europe, just to be able to print the stuff and play games with it.
Yeah,
and
because
buy votes with it, as they do today.
Well, that's the, that's
but
the deal.
Thomas Jefferson said something very interesting. He said that, basically, paper is so unreal, it is not money. Paper is the ghost of money, said Jefferson.
Yep.
And
yep.
we have been haunted by that ghost ever since.
Yeah, paper is poverty.
Paper is poverty, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So we got to go to a break, but I want to come back because I've taken a little bit of umbrage with what you have to say. I don't think that the United States is subject to any of these physics or economic principles. I think that we can just go on and do this forever, and there's not going to be any repercussions.
So we can tax and spend and borrow our way to prosperity.
And print our way out of it with counterfeiting.
Well, see, that's what John Maynard Keynes believed. And this is where we get into the amusement of Keynes, who also believed that savings was a bad thing.
Yep. Listen, we got to go to a
paradox of thrift, as he called it.
We got to go to a break, Lo. We'll come back with, and let's talk about the Keynesian paradox a little bit.
This is KCNR 1460, home of the Free Fire Media.
No more!
Good stuff, you know.
In more ways than one. Watch out here.
Hey, we're talking to Lo Ponte, and before I go any farther, I'm getting all kinds of people asking me, how do we get the book? How do we get the book? I was going to let them languish in their lack of information for a bit of a time, but they're starting to, the natives are starting to get restless. They're calling in, so maybe you can enlighten us there, Lowell, and let us know, how do they get your book?
Oh, sure. The book, just call a toll-free number. And remember, we'll pay for the postage. This book will not cost you a penny. It's also a survival guide that could save your, you know, life savings and your future, too. But by all means, check it out. And then the toll-free number to get the book, 1-800-630-1494. That's 1-800-630-1494.
And what's the
or
name of the
book? Like to say, it's a little bit like Columbus sailing the ocean blue in 1492, but not quite. It's 1-800-630-1494. And you'll get a phone device. Just leave your name and number there. We will get back to you. We'll find out if you'd rather have a Kindle version of the book or something for your computer. By the way, most people don't realize you don't need to buy a Kindle device in order to read Kindle books.
Interesting.
Amazon. You can just put a Kindle app for free on your computer and read books directly on your computer.
Yeah, that's
anyway,
right. What's the name of the book?
630-1494 is the number. And
what's the name of the book again, Lo? Just so
this book that we're giving away at the moment is The Great Withdrawal, How the Progressives' 100-Year Debasement of America and the Dollar Ends. And this way, by the way, we'll be able to contact you as the next eight books in our series of 12 come out.
Nice.
The next one will be this summer, as I said. It will be called Don't Bank on It, and it will go into the horror of what happened in Cyprus.
Yeah.
It goes into the magic that you described so accurately, where when you put your money in a bank account today, you foolishly think it's still your money. But under the current law, it isn't. It becomes the bank's money.
Yep.
It becomes an unsecured asset of the bank, and all you walk out with in that passbook is an IOU.
Yep. Absolutely.
And maybe the bank will pay off on it, and maybe they won't. In any event, because what you've given them is an unsecured asset of the bank, if the government decides to loot the bank for whatever reason, it will take all those unsecured assets as it did in Cyprus. People were horrified to find that the government could just take their bank accounts. They woke up one morning, their bank was locked, their ATM was shut down, they couldn't reach their accounts. Oh, except in one way. And this is what I find so amusing. One of the things the government wanted most, because Cyprus committed the horrible sin of being a tax haven that was widely used by Russian billionaires, is a vast amount of Russian money was flowing through the banks at Cyprus. And the governments had hoped to seize a lot of that money. However, the government of Cyprus delayed their action by a few days. And during those few days, guess what? All the money in the accounts of the Russian billionaires vanished.
Yeah, all the big money got out, all the big boys. Yep.
And people later discovered that while the Cyprus banks were closed down in Cyprus, the branches that they had in Moscow and London remained open.
Just coinciding.
And were allowing withdrawals. And nobody was really paying much attention to the corporate jets flying out of Cyprus. Now, why this is amusing is in recent weeks we heard President Obama say to Russia, if you go any further into Ukraine, we're going to seize Russian assets. Right? You know what happened while he was saying that? Putin's agents in New York walked into the Federal Reserve Bank in New York and withdrew, in government treasuries being held for Russia there, $105.1 billion in treasuries. In other words, they took out more than a tenth of $1 trillion from the New York Federal Reserve Bank, and Obama's administration did not lift a finger to stop them. Russian corporations also took many other billions out during this period. In other words, it was just like what happened in Cyprus. And by the way, you remember that Putin and company said, well, if you seize our assets, we'll seize your assets in Russia, where Pepsi, for example, makes 7% of its worldwide revenue, where Ford and General Motors have auto factories and so on. And the Obama administration turned to them and said, how could you possibly justify that? And Putin's chief legislator on the issue just turned to the Russian news agencies and said, remember what the Europeans did in Cyprus? Our precedent for seizing assets is Cyprus. And you know, he was right.
It's so true.
We've created this perfect precedent for private property meaning nothing.
Yeah, and I mean that, and they established that here in the United States with MF Global and the Sentinel case, and the Dodd-Frank is clear in what it says about the fact that you're an unsecured creditor, and the derivatives and the secured creditors will get paid first if there is a bank failure or the government decides to seize
assets.
Remember,
those old things don't mean anything if we look back to Chrysler and GM and how Obama handled that and how the secured bondholders were just shoved out of the way so the company could be given to the United Auto Workers. who had no legal claim to anything at all.
Yeah, it completely circumvented the bankruptcy laws at that point.
Yeah, and that was overturning more than 200 years of established law in this country. And so go ahead and try to get a secured bondholder next time, kids. You're going to find it a little more difficult.
Yep.
Cities are going to find it a little more difficult, depending on what the outcome in Detroit ultimately is, too, to get people to buy municipal bonds. But this is the challenge. You can't just cheat people forever and expect them to keep cooperating with you. So we've had this surreal behavior ever since Cyprus. And by the way, those who think, well, we're protected, we have the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation behind our accounts. Boys and girls, the Bank of England and the FDIC signed a joint memo of understanding in December 2012 before Cyprus, accepting the doctrine of the bail-in that would be used in Cyprus, and that the chief financial minister and the European ministers, Mr. Dijsselbloem of Denmark, I think it is, or the Netherlands, said this will now be the template from now on for how we will handle bank problems. Before we bail anybody out, we will take all the bank's available assets, including your accounts.
And you get stuck in the bank. You'll get stuck. Isn't that great?
Yeah, so this is why I say, and why we say in the new book, why, in exchange for zero interest payments, are you putting your money in a bank? Do you understand that the Obama administration, through its new bizarre financial entity that they created, this new regulatory panel, do you realize that they also are planning to seize all of the retirement accounts?
Yep.
The way they did in 2008 in Argentina,
yep,
where people woke up in Argentina and found that all the money had been taken out of their retirement accounts, and in its place, an equal face value had been put of Argentinian government bonds. Now, that sounds terribly impressive until you realize that an Argentinian bond has a real value as opposed to a face value of about 29 cents on the dollar. So basically, they stole nearly three-quarters of all the savings accounts, the retirement accounts of people in Argentina, by that one gesture.
Wow, and that's, I guess,
they're planning to do the same thing here. They just need an occasion to trigger it.
I agree. I mean, that's the hope in the Keep the Change deal, because that's what's coming. And I've been saying this for quite some time, that these bail-ins are going to be the thing, because, it, like you say, they've already got the pattern and the template for it through Cyprus and a couple other places, I guess.
Yeah, now, Ludwig von Mises said that in Germany after World War One, as they were going into hyperinflation, what people on the exchanges there did, and I don't speak German, but he used a German phrase that translates as, they carried out a flight into things, meaning instead of investing in paper money that the government can just run willy-nilly off the printing press.
Yep.
By the way, for people to understand, you've all heard the stories about people getting a wheelbarrow of money and running to the store because the money was losing value by the hour. There was a touching story. We've gone at great, great length into what happened in Weimar in several of our books. But there was a touching story of a man who brought in his entire life savings to a government office and said, I've worked all my life for this. What can I buy with it today? And they bit their lips. They did not want to tell him that his entire life savings could no longer buy one postage stamp.
Wow. Well, that's the Keynesian model.
You see, the real horror of Weimar was not just that people, that the speculators won and the conservative, honest, moral people who worked hard and saved got screwed by it. The real danger of Weimar is it shattered the moral base of German society and turned it over to a Weimar Republic that is, if you've seen the movie Cabaret, for example,
yep,
you understand the Weimar Republic was engaged in exactly the kind of generally immoral behavior and values that the Obama administration advocates today. It was socialism, heavily modified by, oh, let's take every depraved minority and call them good and call the Boy Scouts bad.
Well, isn't that
what Weimar was doing? In other words, they paved the way for Adolf Hitler.
Isn't that the Machiavellian model that we always want to, you know, emulate? You know, debase everybody's morality and you know, so that you're not watching the government do what they do?
Well, this is a theme of a forthcoming book that we're dealing with. Don't tell anybody. But the central theme of the book is to go beyond the Gresham's Law. You know, Gresham's Law said that good money drives out bad. And by the way, Gresham was a financial advisor to Queen Elizabeth, who, as successor to Henry VIII and her brother and so on, the Tudor reign stole about three-quarters of the value of the money. In fact, the original term, the Great Debasement, referred to how much silver they had taken out of British money. All sovereigns have loved the idea that they can steal money from the people that way. Oh, by the way, we mentioned John Maynard Keynes. See, there's so much to talk about. We could just go on.
Yeah, let's go to a break and let's talk about Keynes. Let's come back with Keynes.
Yeah, because I have some wonderful quotes people need to hear from Keynes.
Okay, very good.
All right, this is KCNR 1460, Community Radio for the North State.
Bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. And then good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, "This'll be the day that I die. This'll be the day that I die." Did you write the book of love, and do you have faith in God above? If the Bible tells you so,
here with Lowell Ponte. Very interesting, very articulate conversation here. I love it. This is right up my alley.
By the way, I do want to join in something we heard during the break.
Uh-huh.
I want to applaud the efforts for the state of Jefferson.
Very
this
good.
This is April 13th. Today would be Thomas Jefferson's 271st birthday.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and I just happen to be head of the Jefferson's Birthday Committee, dedicated to making his birthday a national holiday for taxpayers.
Great.
An idea, by the way, that I've written up in articles over the years in the New York Times, in the L.A. Times, in Reader's Digest, and so on. In fact, I did a commemorative piece in Reader's Digest on his 250th birthday, but Jefferson was just an incredible giant among men. Were it not for him, we would have probably gone the way of the Soviet Union.
I'll tell you, Jefferson's my favorite guy out of all of them, the money, everything. But we could talk about him for another hour, but let's go back to John Maynard Keynes. And
this is the economist that the Obamaites and progressives and so on looked to, because Keynes wanted to, among other things, abolish the business cycle. He figured if we taxed people when business was good, we could then inject money as a government into the economy when things were bad and level the cycle out. Now, of course, what he doesn't understand is the business cycle is like the heartbeat of the economy. And when you level it out, you basically flatline the country.
Well, they're flatlining us, all right.
But I do have to say this about Keynes as a British economist. Unlike most economists who just live in universities and are theoretical, Keynes actually got involved as an investor himself. He made one fortune, lost it, came back and made another fortune investing in the market. So at least he proved that he had the ability to do that, which most economists, they're just basic theoretical airheads who don't understand anything. But here's what Keynes said. in his 1919 book, The Economic Consequences of the Peace, speaking of World War One, Lenin is said to have declared that the best way to destroy the capitalist system was to debauch the currency, wrote Keynes. By a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate, secretly and unobserved, an important part of the wealth of their citizens. As the inflation proceeds and the real value of the currency fluctuates wildly from month to month, Keynes continued, all permanent relations between debtors and creditors, which form the ultimate foundation of capitalism, become so utterly disordered as to be almost meaningless, and the process of wealth-getting degenerates into a gamble and a lottery. Lenin was certainly right, Keynes concluded. There is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the existing basis of society, that is to say, capitalism, than to debauch the currency. The process engages all the hidden forces of economic law on the side of destruction and does it in a manner which not one man in a million is able to diagnose, wrote John Maynard Keynes in 1919. You notice now we have a Federal Reserve Board that actually says it aims to create what they call positive inflation. An interesting phrase when you understand that inflation is just another word for theft.
Yeah, and who you know, everybody say inflation is good. You always hear that 2% inflation is good. We had 2%. And good for who, you know? Not us.
Well, I mean, you understand the Fed represents above almost everything else. I mean, it is a nominally a private cartel of sure. banks and so on. But what they represent is the interest of the government. And the government interest is in, I mean, now that the government has gone so deep in debt, if interest rates were not held close to zero, every percent the interest rates increase, if government had to pay it, could add up to another $1 trillion
yes.
of obligation to the government. Therefore, they cannot afford to let the interest rates drift upward.
Yeah, if the 10-year goes up to 3.5, it's over, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, unless they think they can squeeze that much money out of you or me.
Or print it.
As one major, well, as the head of the New York Fed at the time in 1946, his name was Rummel, R-U-M-L, famously said in a drunken speech to financial people in New York, he said, don't you people understand, we don't even need to tax you anymore. All we need to do is print money. The government has the printing press. The government can do anything it wants. The government cannot go broke. And, of course, he was right. I mean, we devoted a whole chapter in a recent book to modern monetary theory, which has technically supplanted Keynesianism. They use the name Keynes, but they're operating by modern monetary theory, in which the government assumes that it forever owns all money that it creates. You may have some in your pocket at the moment, but if the government wishes to claim it, it can, and does, as we'll find out on April 15th.
Well, that's the debt. I mean, they're selling the treasuries back out so that they can keep financing the debt. I mean, it's
well,
in a cycle of Ponzi.
As Rummel himself admitted, the real reason they still tax is not in order to raise revenue for the government. It is, A, to keep inflation from exploding.
Right.
So they have to keep clawing enough of the money back that it's not in circulation. You notice they've played this very exotic game of giving the banks money and then having the banks forced to lend the money to the government itself rather than to private people. So that freezes the money. And that's why we're not seeing explosive inflation. Even though, in the last 12 months, boys and girls, while the government is telling you we have 1% inflation and we need more, food prices went up 19%.
Yeah, I just heard that.
How much inflation do you need? But, of course, the government doesn't count food and fuel because those are volatile factors that mustn't be counted. In other words, it's all a lie. Everything they tell you in government stats now is a lie to cover the fact that we're living in this fantasy world. We're living in this Alice in Wonderland economy that's been running on the government creating money out of nowhere. Productivity is at appallingly low levels. Unemployment is massive. It's well above, it's up to and beyond European levels.
So what do we do, Lowe? I mean, we're down to the last couple of minutes. What do you think
when
that
you
we should
start
do?
By reading our book.
Reading the book will help?
Yeah, which will tell you how you can protect yourself, at least, and how we still... I mean, the good news is that the progressives are in a panic. This is why they're openly using the IRS. This is why the Attorney General can actually go before Congress, as he did this last week, and physically threaten a congressman. I mean, it's just, you better not go there, buddy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just surreal.
Yes.
But what it shows is the progressives are scared to death. They've seen the recent polls that show 60% of Americans, when asked by pollsters, does our government rule today with the consent of the governed, 60% say no.
Yeah.
Now, you read the Declaration of Independence, the only thing that gives government legitimacy is that people perceive it ruling with the consent of the governed.
Well, that was the whole thing on the prince. I mean, you wanted to extract everything and keep them down as far and get as much out of them as you possibly could, but don't push them over the edge to where they would revolt.
Well, I mean, we in the current book, The Great Withdrawal, we go into great length about all the means of mind control and manipulation that the government... Do people understand that the White House now actually has a mind control office?
No, I didn't know that.
It was implemented a summer ago. There, I mean, all based on this book, Nudge, by one of their favorite... I mean, they have brain scientists there. They have people who are using the latest brain research, mind manipulation techniques to control the populace.
Is that Cass Sunstein? Is that who that is?
That's Cass Sunstein.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
And we quote some of the shocking, mind-boggling things Cass Sunstein says here. I mean, we've had Holder, we've had Sunstein and others basically say, we're going over to brainwashing. In fact, Holder has used the term brainwashing for what he intends to do to the populace here.
Wow.
Unless you are reading books like ours or listening to shows like yours, the people are easily fooled by that. By the way, again, if people would like the book absolutely free and postpaid, 800-630-1494 is the number. That's 800-630-1494.
Yeah, get a hold of the book and find out what you can do about it out there. Prepare yourself. That's what we've been saying for a long time. We're down to a minute, Lowell, so you got 30 seconds to tell us whatever you can.
Whatever I can. Well, I hope you have a wonderful tax day. I mean, I join in those talk hosts who over the decades have said, what we need is to have election day on the day after tax day.
That's a good one.
Instead of deliberately put as far away from tax day as possible in the calendar, so that people have some connection between how much they're being robbed of. I mean, it's astonishing.
Yep, I agree.
There should be some kind of alternative maximum tax.
Well, listen, Lo, you're a great guest.
Thank you so much for coming on.
But they're going to cut us off here. The music's going to start playing here in a second. But,
okay. Well, right. By the way, 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty. It's cost us $21 trillion, $335,000 per family, and poverty won.
Wow.
Thanks again, Lowell. You were great, and we'll love to have you back in the future.
Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. It is force, and force like fire is a dangerous servant and a fearful master.
This is KCNR 1460, Community Radio for the North State. Simple man.